Hello, NBA fans, and welcome to another finals edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, Jonathan Ibrahim and Ryan Wheeler. What's up, guys?
How's it going, Nick?
Hey, guys. It's good to be back. We've got an exciting series on our hands now. Heading back to Oakland for game five. Lots to look forward to.
I know, and Cavs avoided the sweep last night. They came up big, 137-116. Kyrie was huge. The guy was scorching. Ton of tough shots all over the floor. What are you guys' reactions about him?
Kyrie was amazing, but he's been amazing the past two games. Like, just the degree of difficulty that he keeps hitting shots and keeps hitting shots and keeps hitting shots. I've gotten to be surprised when he misses.
Yeah, he's been looking amazing. Like you said, Ryan, he's been hitting a lot of difficult shots. He missed one of those difficult shots in game three, which, you know, kind of cost him the game, which, depending on which way you want to look at it. But this, you know, last night he was everything that they needed them to be. He had shots in the third quarter to keep them up big, brought them home down the stretch. LeBron was kind of playing the more facilitator role in the fourth quarter, and Kyrie did a good job of finishing and taking them home.
Yeah, 40 points for Kyrie and 7 of 12 from three. You know, he wasn't hitting a ton of threes this series. He really stepped up last night, and like you said, he kind of closed it out. LeBron was kind of doing a more all-around game last night, so it was a nice win for the Cavs. Kevin Love was also pretty big. J.R. Smith, who stuck out to you for the role, guys?
I thought it was amazing to finally see J.R. Smith hit some shots. Like, I'm not a big J.R. Smith fan. I wouldn't want him on my team necessarily, but when he's on, he's on. And the rest of the team and the building just feeds off of him. When he hit that shot, when the shot clock was winding down, he caught it and he was, 32 feet from the basket and just drained a three. And he even had, I believe it was Draymond Green and Klay Thompson closing out on him. At 32 feet, he had two guys closing out on him. And he nailed it. And, like, the roof just blew off the building. And at that point, you knew that the Cavs were going to win.
Yeah, J.R. Smith was amazing. He hit over 50% of his threes. Big game. He was big in game three as well. He's a completely different player when they play in Cleveland. But I'm going to go with Tristan Thompson as my role player that had the biggest impact. 5 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists doesn't look good, but they were literally getting nothing from him in the previous three games. And people are talking about the Kardashian curse, like that's a real thing. And I think he came to play, maybe that gave him motivation, I don't know, but he came to play and he was a threat offensively, and that's all they need from him. Pull some offensive rebounds off the glass. I think he had 4. Give them some extra possessions. And then he hit 5 assists. He actually put the ball on the floor a few times and set up a few open threes. So he looked. There was a couple times I was watching. So he gave them. He was a threat, and I think that's all they really need from him.
I saw him do that last year too. Tristan Thompson in the finals. He can put the ball on the floor. He actually has some handles, and he can do some stuff. He just never really does. And when he does it effectively. And maybe that's something they could use a little more out of him.
Yeah, I think when they have guys like Zaza or last year Bogut guarding him, it gives him a little bit more flexibility to put the ball on the floor because those guys aren't going to really strip him and they don't have the lateral quickness to keep up with them. So I think that's a matchup they can exploit a little bit, but it'll usually only work out in broken plays.
Yeah, but the Warriors do end up having a lot like their fair share of broken plays just because they're double teaming and trapping so much. So I feel like Thompson, they've left him kind of open in the first two or three games, and then last night he kind of took advantage of it finally. And then, like you mentioned with the rebounding, even though they weren't huge numbers in that first quarter, he kind of got a few offensive rebounds, and that kind of just set the tone. And the same thing with the J.R. Smith three from half court, pretty much. That kind of set the tone for the game. That kind of describes what type of game it was for the Cavs. But talking about three-point shooting, you know, I think that was the biggest difference in the game. The Cavs shot 53.3%, and the Warriors shot 28.2%. What do you think is the reason for that? Did the Cavs just get hot? Was it better defense or the Warriors cold or bad defense? What do you guys think?
Well, they scored 86 points in the first half. and the Warriors have one of the best defenses in the league, but the Cavs still scored 86 points in the first half. I mean, it's hard to even wrap your mind around the fact that the team scored 86 points in the first half and it wasn't an all-star game where no one plays defense. Like, the Warriors were actually trying and playing their brand of defense, switching everything, closing out. And the Cavs just hit everything.
Well, it sounds kind of cliche, but as you always hear LeBron say, it's a make or miss league. And, you know, the difference in game three was the 3-point percentage. And again, you see in game four, the difference is the 3-point percentage. It's a great neutralizer. That's why they brought it into the league to kind of make the game a little bit more exciting, especially when you know we're getting down to double digit leads into the fourth quarter. But the way that it's been revolutionized by these two teams, it turns a you know 5-point game into a 15-point game in a matter of 3 or 4 possessions. So it's such a big part of what both of these teams do. And when one team is knocking it down, everything's good, life's good. But if that shot's not going, it's not gonna be a good night. Let's just put it that way.
Going forward for the Cavs, obviously they shot 53%. It's not likely they'll shoot that number again. Do you expect this number to kind of balance out more in game 5 or stay, you know, go Warriors way, Cavs way? What are you guys thinking?
Well, the Cavs don't need to shoot 50% from three. They only need to shoot about, you know, 35-40%. But it's the fact that in the first, you know, few games, barring game 1, they were shooting 28-29%. You can't if you're a team that shoots that many threes, you have to hit some of them. You can't miss that as many as they've been missing. So as long as they can stay around 35-40%, I think they can stay in the series. But again, it'll all come down to that.
Do you guys think the Warriors really wanted to win game 4? Or do you think that they were content to and go back and try to win game 5 on their home court?
No, I think after what happened last year, they're not trying to throw any games. They know what can happen as soon as you let a team back into a series. So I don't think that they tried to throw that game. I think it was just a rough game for them. And, I mean, they were playing good defense. The Cavs were just hitting tough shots, especially in that first half.
Is there any way that the Cavs can play that same kind of game again? Or do you think that the series is over with and it goes back to Golden State?
It's possible. I mean, again, it just comes down to hitting their shots. Games 2 and 3, well, game 1 as well, actually, they had the shots that as a team they like to get. They just weren't going in. If they can hit their shots in game 5, and if LeBron can keep up his pace, you know, 46 minutes a game, they have a chance. I'm not going to say they don't have a chance. It's not like it's a foregone conclusion. It's not going to be easy, but if they can get good minutes out of their bench, if LeBron can rest without the team going, you know, having a net rating of negative 12 in the 2 minutes he's on the bench, yeah, they've got a shot, but it's not going to be easy.
I think for the Cavs, the biggest thing in going into game 5 is going to be matching the energy. You definitely could tell they were playing desperate last night, obviously feeding off the home crowd. They got the J.R. Smith cooking, like I mentioned, the Thompson rebounds. I think the energy is going to be important because defensively, I felt like they were a lot better last night, and especially in transition defense. They got back a lot more last night, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the Warriors had like 29-plus fast break points in almost all the games in this series, and last night they were under that. So I think that's really important for the Cavs to prevent that transition, you know, get that defense set up. And that's where they were really able to make the Warriors a little bit stagnant in some of their half-court sets last night.
Yeah, and that's a great point, is that transition defense. Because there was a sequence last night where LeBron, he pulled up, and I believe he had KD on him, and he pulled up and he nailed a three, and the ball's still in the air. And LeBron just starts backpedaling up to go play defense. Like, he, as soon as he released it, and he was, again, 5 feet behind the three-point line when he shot it, and he put the ball up. He's watching it going towards the basket, still arcing through the air, and he's jogging. He's like backpedaling to go back and get ready to play transition defense. Like, they were just ready to play.
And that makes a huge difference when you play a team like the Warriors, especially in the first 3 games of the series, mostly more in the first 2, that they were able to get in transition. They really got a lot of mismatches. The Cavs weren't able to set up the defense, get the matchups that they like. So it was just like a whole bunch of confusion from the Cavs.
Yeah, because the Warriors, as soon as they get possession of the ball, either inbounding it, rebounding it, whatever, it's back down the floor in 2 seconds. They're ready to start playing and ready to play their offense.
Exactly.
Watching that game last night, did you guys feel like did it even feel like KD had 35 points?
It's crazy. Durant's been so great offensively in the series. Like, he just had a light 35. It wasn't even like he put in much effort. Obviously, they probably could have went to him a little bit more, I think, especially when they had some of those runs by the Cavs. But, you know, he's been amazing to watch, and he's just kind of done it in so many different ways.
You thought they should have went to him more?
Well, I felt like when they had some of the stretches where they were getting like these long runs from the Cavs that they should have given to him more. He was the only one offensively that was able to really create by himself. Curry was getting trapped so much that Durant needed – he was able hitting tough shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he was – it was actually a kind of passive 35 points. He only took – he took 22 field goal attempts. I mean, he led the team in attempts. But it didn't even feel like that. It felt like you just looked up and, oh, KD's got 35 again. But it didn't feel like – I think they could have done a lot more to get him going. I mean, you could have had 50. You should have had 50.
He was at the line 16 times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's where all his points came from, I guess.
He was by far their most aggressive player. I don't think on him. You've got to look at guys like Klay Thompson. And like you said, Steph was getting iced a lot. But Klay
had 13, I think. What's wrong with Draymond Green?
Everything's wrong with Draymond Green.
I think the issue for Draymond this series, though, has been the foul trouble. You know, he hasn't gotten a good rhythm. And obviously last night, the thing with the technical fouls and complaining and getting into it with everybody has kind of been an issue.
I don't know if I've ever seen an NBA play. Actually, that's not true. I have, but he's one of the worst when it comes to controlling his emotions. He has no control.
Yeah, and it's definitely. I mean, he probably should have been ejected. I don't really know for a fact like what happened with the first technical foul, but I mean, it easily could have been ejected. Maybe there wasn't enough to give him that second tech, but he definitely needs to stay in line because the refs know that he's kind of like he gets crazy in the game, so they're gonna eject him if they have to.
And looking at the box score, it shows that he shot 16 shots. He took 6 three-pointers, but it looked like he was gun-shy. It looked like he was open, and he didn't want to shoot. He looked terrified to actually have to put the ball up. And it looked like the times that he did shoot, he pretty much felt like he had to because the shot clock was running down or there was another option, and he thought maybe I have to shoot. But he just looked scared. He looked scared to have to take a shot.
Yeah, he definitely passed up a couple wide-open threes. But Jonathan mentioned Curry before, and I thought – Curry kind of had a rough game, especially from three. I think 2 of 9, and he had a lot of open looks, especially late in the fourth where they were kind of starting to make a run. What do you guys think happened to Curry in game four? Did he choke a little bit or just a bad game?
Go ahead, Jonathan.
I don't think Curry choked. He's going to get a lot of flack whenever he has a bad game, but the Cavaliers did a really good job of defending him. Like you said, they were in a roll. They were trying to take the ball out of his hands. The Cavaliers have a bad habit of not following Curry after he makes a pass. He'll cut maybe through the, down the baseline and for a corner three, and the Warriors will move the ball, and boom, he's wide open. But they did a good job of staying with him even off the ball, and I think it was really just the Cavaliers' defense. I don't think there was much more Curry could have done.
They did a good job being physical with him, and that's something I think they did last year later in the series, and that's something they're probably going to look forward to do. It's going to be hard to take KD out of the game, but they did a good job kind of limiting Steph Curry last night.
Yeah, Steph's not the physical specimen that, you know, 7-foot KD is. He's the normal size point guard, and putting the body on and knocking him around, it does always take him off his game. But to me, he looked a little slow. He looked like he just didn't have that normal Steph energy. And when he started missing a couple shots and he started, you know, getting that face where he just like that smug face, or he starts pouting, and his game's all downhill after that. Like he has a hard time coming back.
Yeah, and he started the game with 2 early turnovers where the Cavs picked him up full court a few times, and I think that really disrupted him. But you guys mentioned this before. The series has had a lot of trash talk. What are you guys' thoughts on that? Do you like that? Do you hate it? What did you see? What do you think about the refs, et cetera, et cetera?
I felt like last night's game took 5 hours to watch because there were so many stoppages in play from having to review the scoreboard and just listening to the players hammer at each other, yell at the refs. It just felt like a very disrespectful game all the way around.
I like the trash talk. I like when players go at each other. But the one problem I have is with the refereeing. That flagrant foul that was called against Kevin Love, I think it was in the first half. I could be wrong. That was brutal. And if that's the way the referees are going to call the game, there's not really any room for trash talk because that's what gets people fired up. That's what causes a few, you know, harder fouls, and the refs try to control it.
And maybe causes someone like Zaza to throw a punch where he shouldn't throw a punch.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think just the inconsistency from the refs just drove everybody nuts on the foul calls. And like you mentioned, Jonathan, you know, obviously it didn't look like Love hit him with a flagrant foul. He hit him in the face, but it was like a follow through on a shot. I thought Zaza was going to get ejected for what he did. That was kind of surprising that nothing happened to him on that situation. I just think obviously that ref crew is not going to be back for game five. There'll be another crew in, but they just need to take better control of the game from the get-go.
Yeah, the players were very much in control of the game. It felt like the refs were not in control at all.
What'd you guys think about that little chatter between KD and LeBron James?
And I love that. I love whenever the two best players are going at each other. Like last year when LeBron and Curry were going at it, it always brings something special to the game. It adds a little bit of an edge. And I genuinely think that these two teams don't like each other, even though Draymond and LeBron hang out during the off season, and KD and LeBron used to work out with each other. I do think that there's a genuine dislike in terms of these teams, and it really does. It adds a little bit to the series.
Where do you think the biggest rivalry is at? Because, I mean, they've met three straight years in the finals. They very well can meet next year in the finals for year four. Like, who do you think genuinely hates one another?
On the teams, like who genuinely hates?
Yeah. So I mean, is it does everyone hate Zaza? Tristan Thompson not get along with Draymond? I mean, like who just has that real friction, that real disdain for one another? I mean, if you watch like Pat Beverly against Russell Westbrook, you can tell that they hate each other. But can you get any sense of that amongst these two teams?
You know, I genuinely think that there is some acrimony between LeBron James and Stephen Curry. I know LeBron and KD are friends, so I don't want to really dip into that too much. And I know Draymond and LeBron are friends, so I don't want to dip into that either. But I genuinely think that there is some real dislike between Steph and LeBron.
Yeah, I could see it. Especially after last year, especially when LeBron got so like he started like yelling in Curry's face after he blocked a shot. LeBron doesn't really do that to anybody, so you can definitely tell there was a little extra emotion there. So I think that. I also mentioned Tristan Thompson, Draymond Green. It seems like they don't like each other at all. Like it was the first quarter of the game and there was some type of foul and Tristan Thompson walked up to Draymond and they looked like they're about to get into it. And I think everybody probably hates Zaza at this point if you're not a Warriors fan.
I think even Warriors fans hate Zaza.
Yeah, even Warriors fans probably do because he always just brings some type of nonsense to the game. And I think there was also another play that somebody took a screenshot of where he stepped on a Cavs player's foot. I think it was LeBron's when he was like coming across this. Yeah. So, I mean, definitely some sketchy stuff from him. It's hard for him not to say he's a dirty player after the things that we've seen just in this postseason.
Seriously. And I was watching the game last night thinking, if he doesn't come back to the Warriors next year, would any other team even want him on their squad?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Everybody kind of always has room for that tough guy. You know, you always want that enforcer, even if you're going to have him sit on the bench. I think he kind of gives him an extra edge, and it's kind of in a positive way for the Warriors. It's a good thing because he kind of gives them some extra toughness that they don't necessarily have other than Draymond. So,
yeah, he's a great post defender. He's tough, like you said, tough as nails. He can hit shots around the rim. He's got good hands. He can pass out of the post, and he can shoot free throws. He's not great at anything. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Zaza is going to be an all-star. Actually, he might be an all-star one of these days. But he plays basketball well. He's a good option at center for a team that doesn't need a lot of, you know, traditional production from that position.
Yeah, it just seems like even his teammates hate him.
And one thing I probably would say he's underrated at is he has a good understanding of team defense.
Oh, absolutely. He's a great defensive player. He is a really good defensive player.
Yeah, he's always exactly where he needs to be. I think I just always watch how the other players interact and relate with one another. And if he's on the ground, you don't see five guys running over to help him get up.
Very true. But I'm sure there's – for every guy that doesn't like him on his team, I'm sure there's one guy that loves him because he set a pick and he gets open three because of him.
That's true.
Moving on from Zaza, LeBron also broke some records last night. Jonathan, what he passed Michael Jordan on the NBA Finals?
Scoring, yep.
Scoring. And then also we had a ton of records in this game in general, mostly by the Cavs, but there was a few by both teams. Most points in a quarter, Cavs had 49. Most points in a half in finals history, Cavs had 86. Most combined points in any finals or postseason game, 154. And most made threes and a half by the Cavs in the finals, 13. So this was a historical game last night, and it took a historical game from the Cavs to beat Golden State.
I don't want to give too much away, but because a lot of what LeBron accomplished last night will come up in the LeBron Watch. It's going to be posted shortly after this this is recorded. But like you said, passed Michael Jordan in points scored in the finals, became the all-time leader in triple-doubles in the finals, passing Magic Johnson, which I'm sure everyone saw. They put up the big graphic in the middle of the game. What's interesting to me is that no other player outside of LeBron and Magic has more than two triple-doubles in the finals. Those guys have 8 and 9, respectively. Yeah, that's amazing to me.
I watched LeBron, and I think that if he keeps this up for 4 or 5 more years, how could you not say that he's the best of all time? He is – he's amazing. He's just – but he's been amazing. He's been a prodigy. I mean, can you – there's no other player that had their high school games televised and that you have known who this guy – but you knew he was going to be amazing since he was 15, 16 years old, and he has lived up to it in every single way. I'm not even a LeBron fan, but he's incredible.
No, I agree. I agree with you, Ryan. Sorry, go ahead, Nick.
Well, I was just going to give you actually a quick shout out talking about LeBron at OTG. Jonathan's got LeBron watch. Jay just dropped an article about LeBron being the chosen one. You know, we have a ton of stuff about LeBron at OTG, so check that out. But go ahead, make your point, John.
Oh, I was just going to say that, yeah, you're right. He's definitely in the conversation as to who the best basketball player of all time is. The problem is that in American sports, we judge players based on how much they win. And if LeBron is – if he doesn't win another championship, there's going to be – he just doesn't have the accolades. Now, I'm not from that school of thought personally, but I understand where it comes from. It's kind of just a traditional way of looking at it. And, you know, the whole 6 for 6, 6 MVPs in the finals for Michael Jordan, you know, that's going to be the argument held against LeBron.
And I think somebody brought up this point before. You know, it's always tough to kind of be like, oh, LeBron's the greatest ever. I think it'll take like 10 years after he's gone for everyone to kind of, you know, put it into perspective. And then you'll finally realize, you know, who's the greatest of all time. But I agree with you, Jonathan. The ring thing is kind of like a little overblown because it feels like LeBron doesn't get enough respect for carrying his team to the finals, you know, 8 straight years and all the stuff that he's done. And just it's like there's been tons of articles and storylines about, you know, LeBron joins your team. There's probably like 90% chance they're going to go to the finals if they're in the Eastern Conference.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I don't see that changing for the foreseeable future at all. I mean, LeBron's on your squad and you're getting to the conference finals. You're getting to the finals every single year. Like he is the only guy who is that much of a difference maker who changes the entire complexion of a conference.
And context matters. So when Michael Jordan went to 6 NBA finals, he was playing against Charles Barkley's Suns, Clyde Drexler's Blazers, the Malone Stockton Jazz, Peyton Sonics. Like, they were good teams. I'm not trying to take anything away from those guys. Did he ever play a team that had 2, 3, 4 Hall of Famers? In fact, every team he's played in the finals, I think, has had at least 3 Hall of Famers. You know, future Hall of Famers.
No, that's very true. I mean, this Warriors team, I think there's a great argument people would make that this is maybe the most talented team ever. And if LeBron were to beat them, or he beat them last year and they won 73 games. So I think that kind of just speaks about his accomplishments right there. And you mentioned a little bit is the plus minus in the series in general is the effect that LeBron has had when he's not on the floor. It's kind of been similar to what Westbrook was to the Thunder in that OKC Rocket series. And without LeBron out there, it just feels like everything collapses for the Cavs.
Yeah, that LeBron in game 3, he sat for 2 minutes, plus 7 in the 46 minutes he played, and then they were minus 12 in the 2 minutes he was on the bench. To me, that is unbelievable. In 2 minutes, if you extrapolate that out for a full quarter, that's 72 points in a quarter. That's the rate that they scored when he went to the bench for 2 minutes.
That is nuts.
It's unbelievable.
And it's not like they don't have other great – like they have Kyrie and Kevin Love. It just shows you the amount of impact that LeBron has.
There's not another player in the league that actually does more for his team. I mean, you could argue that Russell Westbrook, but he's all offensively. And his defense is kind of shaky. He doesn't put out that kind of effort on defense. LeBron is on both sides of the ball all the time, and he is the heart and soul is everything that the Cavs do.
Yeah, exactly. But let's move on to game five. So what do you think is going to be the biggest adjustment we see from the Warriors in game five?
They're going to be at home and they are lights out at home. That's pretty much, I think, the long and short of what it's going to take for Golden State to win. Cleveland had an epic, historic game. I mean, again, they scored 86 points and a half. That doesn't even seem like it's possible in an NBA game. And that's what it took for them to win game four. Going back to Oakland, and that crowd is going to be insane, and Steph Curry is going to be having his home cooking food made by his wife Aisha on her cooking show, and they're going to be going crazy in Golden State, and I don't see any way there's not confetti dropping from the ceiling.
Well, I think with the series heading back to Oakland, the number one thing they got to do is they got to hit their shots early. They got to come out of the gate. Curry's got to get hot early. Durant's got to get hot early. Clay's got to hit a few shots. If they can come out hot and build a lead early, they'll be all right, but they can't afford to fall down as big as they did last night.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think come out in that first quarter, come out hot. Don't let, if they come out and, you know, get a 15, 20 point lead in that first quarter, which they're fully capable of doing, it kind of would kind of take the Cavs out of the game and deflate them. If the Cavs come out and they come out with a 15 or 20 point lead early in that first quarter, all that, you know, stress kind of sets in, that anxiety. Oh my God, we blew 3-1 last year. Is this going to happen again? So I think it's really important for the Warriors to kind of shut that door real quick in the first quarter.
And if the Cavs win game five in Oakland, that series heads back to Cleveland. Now it's 3-2. Now you've lost two straight. You almost lost three straight. There's a good chance Cleveland wins that game at home. Now we're heading back to where we were last year in a game seven situation where you've just given up three straight games, and now all the pressure is on you. All the doubt is in your mind. The other guys are all confident as hell. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing in sports. One game can change everything. But biggest adjustment you see for the Cavs in game five?
If there's any possible way they can do again what they did in game four, then they'll win. But if anything less, and I don't see any way that they can hang on for game six.
In terms of adjustment, I just think defensively they still need to tune up a few things. There's still guys coming off of Zaza or coming off of Draymond to help – coming off their guy to help against Zaza or Draymond, and I think that's got to stop. They did a good job of defending the three-point line last night, but there's still just the fact that Curry, Clay, and Durant, they missed a few open ones. And they've got to really, really clean that up because there's just no margin for error.
Yeah, I agree with the wide-open shot thing. There was a few wide open ones from Curry late in that game he missed. And then we mentioned it, Ryan mentioned it. Draymond was kind of really passive. If Draymond comes out and has a big game five and hits a lot of threes, like they haven't got a ton out of him offensively scoring wise, that would be huge. Obviously the fouls have been an issue for him, but I think the Cavs kind of tightening everything up. And one thing they did last night though, that was better than game three, game two and one, was they had a lot more effort defensively. They were making that fifth, sixth, and seventh effort. And that's what you have to do against the Warriors because they pass so well.
Yeah, you can't get lost at all against the Warriors. And you in games one, two, and three, you saw that happening time and time again of J.R. Smith just getting completely lost on defense. Kyrie even getting lost trying to get around Curry or get around picks to stay with Curry. And last night they were so locked in. They were all over everyone. And they're just – I mean, you never see the Warriors milk down a shot clock. And that shot clock ran down time and time again last night. And for the Cavs to have a chance, they have to stay locked in on defense for 48 minutes.
But before LeBron go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, LeBron played 40 minutes last night, which means he was on the bench for 8 minutes. Early in the fourth quarter, he was sat on the bench, and the Warriors made kind of a mini run, scared Ty Lue a little bit, and put LeBron back in the game. When he is on the bench, the Cavaliers have to really, really muck up this game. Fine, they want to play at the same pace as the Warriors throughout the rest of the game when LeBron's on the floor. Fine, I don't really have a problem with that. The bench, you can't keep trying to play that way. You've got to bounce the air out of the ball. You've got to throw it into the post. You've got to muck things up, take a few fouls on the defensive side. Don't try and play with the Warriors fastball when he's on the bench. It's just not going to work, and that's how you end up with those crazy net plus minus numbers.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point about LeBron. Yesterday, I feel like he wasn't gassed come fourth quarter time, and that's something that's probably happened to him in some of the other games. And I think that had something to do with obviously getting a little bit more rest, but also the fact that the game kind of slowed down, the sense that there were so many foul calls and reviews. Every little extra minute kind of helps give him some extra rest when it comes to the fourth quarter.
Jonathan, you mentioned Ty Lue a second ago. Is Ty Lue a good coach?
We won't know until he coaches somebody other than LeBron, to be honest, because, you know, LeBron has such a big influence on that team. He shares the responsibility with Ty Lue when it comes to, you know, adjustments between games and things like that. So I from what I've seen, I think he's a pretty good coach, and he's doing his job and not getting in the way, which I think was something that David Blatt did a little bit, which obviously rubbed LeBron the wrong way. But in terms of whether or not he's a good coach, I guess we'll find out as time goes on, but it's hard to tell at this point.
It's tough to say. Go ahead, Ryan.
I look at him on the sideline. I look at Kerr on the sideline. And Kerr just seems so much more engaged and talking to his players and pumping them up and just inspiring them to greatness. And it looks like Ty Lue just has that face on the sideline. Like, he's just disgusted with what's going on all the time. And I don't see like the tactical genius from like that you see out of a Brad Stevens, you know, all of his timeout scoring opportunities. And I don't know. I just have never gotten the sense that I feel like Ty Lue was the guy to lead him to, you know, the promised land of multiple titles.
I don't know about that. I feel like Ty Lue's ATOs are really good. I think coming out of timeouts, they always execute a nice play. And I think game three, when they called up that play at the end, when they were down by two, or maybe they were down by three, they called a play for Kyrie. The Warriors just defended it well, but that shot where LeBron got stripped on the 3-point attempt, that wasn't the play that they drew up. It just, the Warriors played good defense, but I think their after timeout plays are actually quite well executed. Again, it's with Ty Lue. I don't want to say too much because I don't know what he says to his team when they go to the locker room. I don't know what he says to his team at practice. He just maybe he's got a natural leader on his team. Steve Kerr is the leader of the Warriors. They don't have, you know, that natural born leader on their team. Steph Curry's not a natural born leader. He's more of a kind of Tim Duncan lead. KD's the same way. Whereas if you look at the Cavs,
you don't think Draymond's a natural
leader? Your leader can't be your fourth best player. He can't be your fourth best player. He's got to be the, you know, you look to both on and off the floor for inspiration, and that's not Draymond Green. Draymond Green is probably the most out of control player on the Warriors, so he can't be their leader. Steve Kerr is the leader of that team.
I love the scenes, and you know, we've all seen the memes and of Draymond barking and yelling at KD, getting him pumped up. I don't know. I love having a guy like Draymond on a squad. I think that he's the heart and soul of that team, in my opinion.
I completely agree. I don't think he's a leader. I don't think you can have a guy like that. If that's your leader, then you're in trouble because he's volatile, he's out of control. And again, he's the fourth best player on the team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think a great point about this is kind of like the major difference is like we're not going to know enough about Ty Lue until LeBron's gone, because LeBron's such a big impact on your team in a sense that he's not only the leader, but he's going to have an impact coaching, and you're going to have a kind of a different freedom coaching when LeBron's on your team, because you need to give him the ball and kind of do what he wants because he's the best player in the world. Where like Steve Kerr on the other side is the incomplete control of his team, and he's the leader of that team, like you mentioned. I think Draymond's like more of the emotional leader, but Kerr kind of runs the ship, and you can kind of even sense, obviously they did great with Mike Brown, but you can kind of sense everybody's relieved when Kerr's there. It's just like having that guy around kind of gives you the same comfort. It's like the same thing when LeBron's on the floor for the Cavs. When LeBron's out there, everyone seems more comfortable. They don't have these collapses when he's on the bench. So, but moving on from there, who needs to have a big game if the Cavs want to win game five?
Well, I think you're already going to get a big game out of Kyrie. You're going to get a big game out of LeBron. It's going to all come down to the Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, that trio, if they can play hard and be where they need to be and put out that extra effort. I mean, if Tristan Thompson can't grab 10 rebounds again, if he's at 4 rebounds or 2 rebounds or whatever, then there's no way they can win. And if Kevin Love is at, you know, 6 points or even 13 points, there's just no way they can win. I mean, you got to have a 20-point game from Kevin Love, and you got to have a 10-rebound game from Tristan Thompson.
If they're going to win game five, they need a good game from LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Richard Jefferson, Darren Williams, Iman Shumpert, Kyle Korver, Derek Williams. Like, they all have to play well, right? That's what helped them win last night. They all played. Their bench shot over 50% for the first time in the series. That's huge.
Yeah, Darren Williams even scored.
Hey, Darren Williams was 2 of 3, shot 66% from the field.
Yeah, he did, and the one he missed, he just had to shoot it because the clock was running.
Yeah, he came to play last night. I don't know how I still don't have any faith in him whatsoever. But they all need to play well. I don't think it falls necessary. Obviously, LeBron has to be LeBron. Kyrie can't do 3 quarters. Kevin Love can't go 1 for 9. But it everybody has to come to play. Those three guys could have great games, and the team can still lose just based on how poorly the bench performs.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I mean, obviously everyone's going to have to play relatively well for the Cavs to win, but I think who needs to step up the most is what we saw is the 3-point shooters. You know, in that game, they had to keep the Warriors honest, and the Warriors were helping a lot earlier in game 1, 2, and 3, and the Cavs weren't able to punish them. Kevin Love hit a couple contested threes, you know, and same thing with JR. Like, they made the Cavs have to really stick to them, the Warriors really stick to them on the perimeter. So I think that really helped the Cavs, gave Kyrie more room inside, same thing for LeBron, so... And more threes equals more long rebounds, more chance for Tristan Thompson to do something effective. So I think it's the role guys. We kind of expect a big game from Kyrie and LeBron, but it's the other guys, and they need to hit their shots. Yeah. What type of numbers do you expect from LeBron in game five? Just a quick prediction, points, rebounds, assist.
You can't have anything less from LeBron than a triple-double. He's going to have 30 points. He's going to have 12 rebounds. He's going to have 11 assists. He's going to have a couple of steals. He has to be Hercules. He has to be Atlas with the entire world on his shoulders. LeBron James is the man on that squad. And if he doesn't do everything for them, then they're not going to get anywhere.
If I was to guess a stat line, I'd probably say 42 points, rebounds, and 8 assists. And he's got to be active on the defensive side. I don't know if that'll show up in the box score or not, but he has to be active. And he has to play both sides at an elite level for them to win.
Yeah, I think the same thing. He's going to have 30-plus and over a triple-double. Who for the Warriors needs to step up if they want to win Game 5 and close this thing out?
Well, KD's averaging 32 points a game in this series or so. And I expect him to have another 30, 35, maybe he can get up to 40 in this next game. But you cannot have Steph Curry at 14 points. You got to have Steph Curry at 23, 24 points in order for them to win. And he's got to hit more than 2 threes. If you have a game where Steph hits 6 threes, they're bringing home another championship. But if you have a game where Steph hits 2 threes, then we're going back to Cleveland.
I have a feeling the Cavs are going to come out and play tough defense on Steph again. I have a feeling he's going to struggle a little bit like he did in game 4. So I'm going to say Klay. Klay has to go – he has to take more than 11 shots when Curry's struggling.
Especially with some of the matchups that Klay's getting. You know, when they're putting Kyle Korver on him or, you know, players that he needs to take advantage of this matchup. And I think Klay's not been – he's just – sometimes he just, like, doesn't try to drive. He just, like, pulls up really deep from three. So maybe a little bit more aggressive than that. I think just one of the Splash Brothers or even Draymond – just long as somebody can step up offensively and give them a 20-plus points. But I'm looking more probably at the perimeter of the Splash Brothers between Klay and Curry. I think John's right. I think they're going to kind of attack Curry again defensively, and it's going to put pressure on Klay, and he needs to step up.
So can Curry get away with not being a 20-point scorer? I mean, last night he had 10 assists. Can he be a facilitator and them still have a chance to win?
Of course. I mean, how many other point guards can go for 14, 10, and 5? And we're you know, crucifying them the next day for having a bad game. Like, that, 2 steals as well. Like, he had a decent game. It wasn't his typical level of greatness. But I think if he can give them, you know, production away from scoring the basketball, they've got enough scorers on that team to get the job done.
Yeah, very true. And they have, and he can impact the game in other ways. The only thing really he has to do is just make sure he hits his open shots. You know, don't force it. And if they're going to trap you, just find your teammate. The 10 assists was a great point. Who do you guys think wins game five?
I can't see any scenario where the Warriors don't hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy after game five.
I picked the Cavs to win this series. It's the King. I'm going with the Cavs. Tight game. Cavs pull it out in the end.
This is a tough one because part of me could see the Cavs definitely pulling this away, but I'm going to have to agree with Ryan on this one. I think the Warriors close this out because they just do not want to deal with any amount of stress that would come with losing this game five and going back to Cleveland. I think it just leads to too many problems. So for them, this is almost like a must win. So I think they're going to come out and play and kind of end this thing in five.
I can see this shaping up like the 08 series with the Celtics and the Lakers when the fourth quarter was just a 12-minute celebration of the team. and because in that series, the Celtics were just winning big in the third quarter, and they just kept hitting shots. And for that last 12 minutes, the entire building was on fire and just ready to celebrate their team. And I can see the Warriors up by 8 at halftime, and then they go on their third quarter tear, and they're up by 20 at the end of the third quarter. And then the last 12 minutes are just a big celebration in Oakland.
But that Lakers team didn't have LeBron James.
That's true.
I think the one thing for the Cavs that they want to win game five too is going to be the fact that they're not going to probably win the three-point battle as well as they did in game four. So they need to find another battle that they can kind of take advantage of. And if I had to make a guess, I think somewhere they could definitely win is rebounding, especially if Tristan Thompson steps up a little bit more. So that could be definitely something to keep an eye on, is where else are the Cavs going to be able to beat the Warriors to give them that extra edge in game five?
I just can't help but look at Golden State. Looks like they had an off game and they still scored 116 points. And if you're considered having played good defense and you're giving up 116 points, and it looks like the Warriors had a bad game and they scored 116 points, then if their bad game looks like that, then they're looking pretty good all the way around. It took a historic effort from Cleveland to win one game in this series.
Yes, and we will see what happens in game five. Who knows? We might be back for a game five recap or a series recap. We do not know, but there will be a halftime show regardless at game five, so check that out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Ryan and Jonathan, thanks for hopping on. Enjoy game five, guys.